I don't want to be a home developer. I don't want to own a neighborhood or do single family homes. So we'll sell that off. And there's another assisted living component to it that we'll probably sell that off. And we're hoping that the money that we'll make from the appreciation and just, you know, buying raw land and getting a lot of stuff done, you know, you get all the hard work done, it adds a ton of value. So we'll turn around and then invest in the apartment community that we'll put there. So that's our ultimate goal, is to be the ones that own the apartment community.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Seth Teagle is a firefighter who transitioned to a vertically integrated multifamily company. They're developing land, taking down deals, and kicking butt and taking names. Seth, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. You know, we got to talk really off air before we really started recording this. You guys are doing a lot of crazy things. And it's not crazy, but amazing things. And I'm absolutely loving what I was hearing. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes in the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started with nothing, just a simple blue collar fireman, right? With a dream of being some big real estate investor. Where I'm at now, I own a company that has just holdings in just over 2,000 units. So we've got about 600 here in Central Ohio, and then we have got equity holdings in over 1,400 across the country. And then we vertically integrated last year. So we've got property management and construction that we are doing all in-house. And where do we see it going? I'm not really sure. I don't have a stopping point. I don't have like a unit count or a deal, you know, that this is my last deal kind of thing. It's just stuff keeps coming towards us and we say no to a lot of things, but then, you know, through the pile of no's, there's usually a yes or two in there. So that's what we look for.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I mean, it's not like you're classically trained in the building a business, vertically integrating it and doing deals all over the country when you're a firefighter, right? I mean,
right.
You guys are trained to put out fires. How did you educate yourself and really, you know, build your team around you? What were some things that you did to scale in a meaningful way?
You know, so for me, you know, it all started like 6 or 7 years ago. I had, you know, like I said, living life. I've been in the fire service 21 years. I started when I was 18. I did college. During college, I was in the fire service. And somebody that I knew back then, you know, we'd kind of like gone separate ways. And he went into real estate and I went into the fire service. And so I had lost contact with him for about 10 years. And when I finally reconnected with him, he was investing, he was wholesaling, he was doing hard money lending, he was doing all this crazy stuff I'd never even heard about. But I was super interested. So he sent me an MP3 via email, a course that he did on house flipping, just to kind of like, hey, you know, because he usually teaches these courses. And he was like, I'll just send it to you because I know you. Take a listen and see what you think. And so I just consumed that. I was hooked. I was like, this sounds awesome. But I had nowhere idea where to start. So I, you know, and then I didn't know anybody locally that was doing it, you know? And so, you know, I was just kind of like listening to podcasts. I had found out about Bigger Pockets. So back then I was listening to that. It was all single family for, you know, 90% of the stuff that was on there. And I met a guy he was a contractor. I met through a job I had hired him for, and he was actively flipping houses. So as soon as I heard that, I was like, man, I want to talk to this guy. So long story short, we became good friends. I offered to work for him for free for as long as it took me to feel comfortable. So I did project management and I did property management for him. He had a small portfolio, about 20 units or so, single family, some small multi. And then he was flipping houses as well. So I would do all of the project management for that. And it helped him out because he knew I'm trustworthy and I knew it was what I was doing. And it was great for me because I could get all the hands-on experience I wanted to. I had access to him to ask questions and all that kind of stuff. And I had no capital at risk. So that was the great part. And we did that for about a year. And through that process, I realized that multifamily was was kind of my lane. I was trying to figure out, how do I scale? How do I grow business? How do I become financially independent while continuing to have a career? Because I still was super passionate about the fire service. I loved everything about it. I'd spent so much time and schooling and money, you know, like kind of perfecting that craft. And so I was doing both I've been doing both for a long, long time. And I'd say the first deal I ever went into was a 50 unit. I bought that with one investor. We kind of pooled our money together. I took that down, spent a year there pretty much every day that I was at the firehouse, going over, you know, materials, doing some of the work, managing contractors, just kind of like earning my stripes on that deal. And I just knew that if that deal could go right and go well, then I'd be set. You know, now I have a story, I have a resume. My wife would believe that this could be successful, you know, all the important things. And so we bought that one. We did it for about 13, 14 months, refied, did very well on the refi, was able to pay back any investor that we had brought in, and then just went on to the next one. And then we went on to the next one. And it's just kind of grown to be this big thing. And as we've grown, we've brought on other people into the team to, you know, work for us. We employ about 15 people on the management side and about 7 or 8 guys on the construction side that solely focus on our unit turns and the renovations. And then, like I said, just networking and meeting other people that either want to get into Columbus or need a KP on a deal, or they want somebody with experience, or maybe they're running into the situation that I did where I went through about 6 banks before I found one that would believe in me enough to do that first loan and give me an opportunity to really kind of get the thing off the ground. So that's kind of how we've gotten to partner with other people, is just, you know, kind of being out there and networking and, you know, having a proven track record.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely intriguing. I mean, and I love just kind of natural progression for you. Were there bottlenecks along the way when you seem to get stuck in a rut and we're like, all right, how do I get out of this?
Yeah. So, I mean, like my first deal, I went in undercapitalized. I didn't even, you know, again, you don't know what you don't know. I had enough money to close the deal and about $50,000 less and $50,000 more than that. And I thought I'll be set. And then when the first payment came in and I was about 14 tenants short of what I thought I was supposed to be at, it got real, real fast, you know. And I called another guy that was a firefighter up in Strongsville, Ohio, and he had gotten out of the fire service and was a full-time investor. And I called him and, you know, he'd kind of been like a mentor from a distance, and we talked and he kind of gave me some things that I could try to do or whatnot. And the big thing that he said was like, man, you better get on it and find some private capital, just do notes for you so you can, you know, raise some money. And I just went hardcore after it. I was able to raise a couple $100,000 doing that. And we were able to, like I said, the project was successful in the end. You know, there's a lot of hurdles I jumped through on just that one. And then, you know, other bottlenecks, again, anybody that has scaled, part of the, you know, you might want to be an investor, but being a business owner and being an employer all comes with its own things that you don't even think about. And so just dealing with some of the HR things we have to worry about, some of the, you know, the background checks, just keeping employees happy, you know, working conditions, material ordering, the logistics. I mean, what did we do last year? We did about $1.5 million in just materials for our renovations. And so it's a full-time job for somebody that we have here that just manages the logistics of getting the material ordered and getting it from point A to point B. So, you know, all of those things were bottlenecks. And when we realized we were bottlenecking, we were like, we hired somebody, you know, to take it over. So
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. When you run into a challenge, and especially once the business starts generating revenue where you can afford mm-hmm. to bring people on, that sounds like a really neat or a smart way to scale, I should say. Let's talk about this land deal. I mean, so you guys are not just, I mean, 50 units, it's a value add deal. Okay. You turned it in 14 months. Good job. I mean that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But breaking into development's a brand new set of skills. Talk to us about this project and then tell us, how did you work up the courage to get into development? I mean, or even how did you get into development? Because that, again, that's a brand new set of skills beyond just a value add apartment complex.
Right. So, yeah. So, I mean, again, it all goes back to networking. You know, we met a group that we did a couple of deals with here last year that wanted to get into the Columbus market. One of the guys on their team he's done a ton of development and ground up construction. I had not or have not really done a ton of it. I know kind of like what I need to do and where we want to go and how to get there, but I by no means have the experience to take down a huge deal. But, you know, again, it's all, you know, who's in the room. And, you know, so he's part of our team. There's 3 of us on the stream group. If you looked at our website at all, or anybody else does, there's 3 of us there. And, you know, he brings a level of knowledge and experience that we don't, you know, buy the apartment building, renovate it, you know, do the value add, refi, like we've got that down. But we wanted to kind of, you know, this opportunity came in front of us and we were like, man, this is like, it's in my backyard. You know, it's less than 10 minutes from my house. I know the area very well. I know the demographics, the economics, I know all of it very, very well. It's within 20 minutes of Columbus, which is a phenomenal market right now in the Midwest. Tons of growth, huge housing shortage, tons of, you know, equity groups and other, you know, overseas investors that are coming into our, you know, into Central Ohio, and they're just buying up the marketplace. And it's very hard for a local guy to compete with institutional buyers or, you know, these large equity groups, because they're just buying for reasons where I can't compete with that, you know. So we are always looking and doing well in some of the tertiary markets. And this happened to be in kind of like a secondary tertiary market to Columbus. But one of the amazing things that has been publicly released in the last, few weeks is that Intel's building, I think they're doing like, it's like a $20 billion complex that they're going to do this chip manufacturing plant. And the chip manufacturing plant will be between where I live and Columbus. Mm-hmm. And all the things that I know about the area, you know, the land is pretty much locked up right now between Columbus and where I live out here in Granville, Ohio, which is about 20 minutes east of Columbus. You know, the utilities cannot be ran there. The townships and the municipalities don't want to run the sewer lines, the electric. They don't want to run all the things that need to be there. So that land is just going to continue to sit there for the next 10 to 15 years. And so we've kind of like, where can we go to get a good deal on something that, you know, if we've got to skip all, you know, obviously I'd love to buy in that area, right? That's right. That's kind of like everybody would, you know, but this piece of land came up off market for a broker that I'm friends with. My kids go to school with his, you know, so it's a great relationship. And he had been putting this thing together for like a year and came to me and said, hey, we had bought three or four deals from him over the last couple of years, believes in what we're doing. We're local, you know, and it's a great opportunity for us to kind of get our development feet wet locally. Again, like we've got a partner that has done it. So we have the guidance there,
right?
But you know, he's not here in Ohio and I doubt he'll ever even come look at it, but he's there. You know, we have the experience, we have the qualifications to get it done. And like I said, I'll be working on that pretty much full time while we get things underway and get the zoning and entitlements done and all that. Then our plan will be to sell off parts of the land that we like. I don't want to be a home developer. I don't want to own a neighborhood or do single family homes. So we'll sell that off. Mm. And there's another assisted living component to it that we'll probably sell that off. And we're hoping that the money that we'll make from the appreciation and just, you know, getting all buying raw land and getting all that stuff done, you know, you get all the hard work done, it adds a ton of value. So we'll turn around and then invest in the apartment community that we'll put there. So that's our ultimate goal, is to be the ones that own the apartment community.
That's intriguing. Yeah. So you guys don't want to do the ground up in the assisted living. You don't want to do the ground up in the single family homes. You want to build the apartment complex, sell off the rest of it once it's entitled, and then use that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the plan as it sits today, right? I mean, you know, who knows what'll happen, you know, between now and then. You know, I've always liked assisted living, but again, you know, I believe in staying in your lane, right? I know guys have been real estate investors. They're like, I'm going to go open a restaurant. And then that implodes on them and they lose all kinds of money, you know, or whatever. And I know apartments, I know multifamily, you know, I know the market, I know that's my space and my lane. So for us, you know, I just don't know that I'd want to get into building single family homes and all that. And there's plenty of other developers around Columbus that would love it. So if we can sell the land to them and make a profit, then they can turn around and develop it, make a profit. Everybody wins.
How do you model that out? Like, how do you project what the future resale value of the home development side or the assisted living project? How do you value that into your model?
So right now we're doing everything on our own. So we have the capital that we're taking it down, just the three of us. And then, you know, we're working closely with the broker that has the deal, plus, you know, just again, our local knowledge of the market and what raw land, or I shouldn't say what raw land is selling for, but what is land selling? What are home parcels selling for once all the entitlements have been done and all the streets are done and the, you know, all that work is done? What are they selling for right now? And as long as we, you know, if we, let's say we buy the, we're paying, I don't know, $14,000 a parcel, and then we put $20,000 in, we're all in for $34,000. We can turn around and sell it to a developer for $55,000, and then he might sell it to the general public for $75,000, you know, or whatnot. But, you know, when there's 250 to 300 of those parcels, it gets to add up pretty quickly at $15,000 pops. So
right,
that's kind of what we're doing. Like I said, it's obviously going to be pro forma out, you know, but we're doing as much details as we can now and looking at everything and kind of, you know, understand, you know, doing full economic research and making sure that everything checks up. But there's a few different subdivisions going in and around this area. So we're really just, you know, taking data from what they're doing and what they're selling for and all that kind of stuff and kind of modeling those numbers into what we're looking at.
Right. That's absolutely intriguing. Love that. Yeah. Was there any, I mean, other than bringing on a partner like you guys have done that has the industry expertise, is there any other advice you would give to somebody that's looking to get into development?
Into development, I would just say, do your research. You know, there's so many things that, you know, I'm comfortable with it because I know the area. I live, like I said, so close to it. But if I was buying something that was in an unknown market or an unknown area, there's just a ton of research and things you got to do really before, you know, anything goes hard. And for us on this, you know, we have it in contract, but our runway is 120 plus days, you know, so we've got a ton of time to do all of our due diligence, to do all of our research. You know, it's really the way the contract was written is if the zoning gets, you know, if everything goes the way that we believe it will and the way that the seller has, you know, like the way that they've kind of got the ball rolling. And as long as it rolls the way that they say it will roll, we're going to be good. But if it doesn't, then we have contingencies within the contract where we can then back away.
Sure.
And I think it's like, I think we have half of our money that we put down going hard after like 6 months or 8 months. So like I said, you know, in 6 months, we'll know way more than we do today. And as long as everything continues, you know, every box continues to get checked, then our money will go hard and we're going to be good to go.
That's intriguing. I love that. Thanks for taking the time to break that down. Seth, let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is this: what is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
Ooh, probably my phone. So I do all my scheduling through that. I do everything, you know, but it used to be just kind of like a novelty, but now it's like this, I'm on the road so much or going to different, you know, meetings and whatnot that, man, if I didn't have that thing, you know, it would be, life would stop pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Second question is, if you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I kind of mentioned it earlier. I would definitely go in with somebody that you know, like, and trust for your first deal, you know, or if you're changing asset classes, go in with somebody that has done it and has experience on your first deal to kind of cut your teeth, because there's so many landmines that are out there that you don't even know about. And I mean, like you said, if you can learn from somebody else's mistakes, why recreate them? So, you know, you may end, like when I did my first apartment deal, I gave up 50% to somebody that did hardly anything. They set foot on the property like twice, but you know, it got me into the next 5, 6, 7, 8 deals, you know? So that's the thing, is that's probably my big thing, is not to be so, I don't want to say small minded, but don't be like, so like think bigger, you know what I mean? Like, don't think of just that first, that one deal you're thinking at today. Right. Think about what that one deal will unlock for you, you know, next year, 2 years from now or whatever, and how that can snowball.
Right. I love that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
We are giving back through a homeless organization here in Newark. There's a lot, I mean, there's just always people in need. And so rather than, I'm not a big fan of like giving somebody that's panhandling on the side of the street money, right? There's tons of organizations that are out there that can verify what you're doing and making sure that it's getting to the right people that need it. And so we try to help fund one here that's local for me and help them whenever they have needs. They let us know and we kind of help guide that and work with them. So
that's fantastic. I love it. Seth, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you and your company, what is the best way to do that?
They can look me up on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Just check out my name, Seth Teagle, or they can go through our website. It's the www.thestreamgroups, the groups is plural.com. And they can fill out our information request on there. And then that comes to my email. And then I'll usually follow up within a few days and we can connect that way.
Sounds great. Thank you, Seth, for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a good day. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.